This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Limpopo is looking at recovering its economy as it hosts a provincial mining, energy and industrialization investment conference. Now, if you break that down, right, hosts a provincial, which means, of course, yes, it's going to happen provincially. But when you talk about provincial and these kind of conferences, we talk about a lot of things as well. We talk about local government, how it's going to assist in jobs. We talk about how the province wants to build itself, how the province wants to reposition itself. It's part of a national conversation, but it's in the main a conversation that is going to deal with the province of Limpopo, and that's the focus also that I want to engage here. In as much as we're talking about mining, energy and industrialization investment conference, of course these things have, you know, national platforms. For when you look at energy, there's Eskom, there's rolling blackouts, there's the issues that just come with that, there's the issue of green economy, and I want to touch on that as well. And then there's mining, and we've seen recently what's going on in the mining industry, also the zamazamas and what we've been seeing here in Gauteng, and now the processes to go and rehabilitate and or deal with those mines that have, you know, been plaguing communities for a very, very long time. And some of those processes to deal with those mines is to actually go out and seal them, and to make sure that you can't gain entrance. But of course, you know, we are living in South Africa, and we will see that in due course that will have shifted. There'll be a report in due time that says the country did not close those mines. The zamazamas are back. In fact, the situation is worse, and we'll be back there again with those scenarios. It's just the way, you know, you get used to the kind of conversations in this particular country. That's how they operate. I wish some days we'd get actually to a scenario where the zamazamas and illegal mining becomes an issue. Government, whilst late into the game, observes, does something, and it doesn't return because government has taken a, you know, a solution that needs permanency to it, and they do it. So, yes, that's a different conversation to be held. Let's go to Limpopo at the moment. And I said I'm being engaged here by Matodzi Ratumbu. And Matodzi Ratumbu is the HOD for Economic Development, Environment and Tourism in Limpopo. Matodzi, welcome, Brur, to Power 98.7. Welcome to Power Perspective.
Thank you very much.
How are you, man?
I am very well. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. And you know what? It's late in the day, Chief. It's 10:45. In fact, we can relax. We can chill. The questions are going to be easy. It's not going to be that hard. But I do want to ask you, you know, I've been to your province a few times. I've enjoyed, of course, the tourism in that part of the world. You've got the three big, I think, game parks in that part of the world, including the Kruger National Park as well. But there are two other big ones as well. So from a tourism perspective, you know, it's a part of the world that I also enjoy heading to and just relaxing when I need to. You live there, and I'm going to ask, are you born and bred from the province?
Yes, I am born in Limpopo in Vembe district.
Mm. So naturally, where I go and chill, you're always chilling. Where I go and rest because I need to get away from Gauteng, you are already in the resting places, Brur. And I think tourism is important for Limpopo before we even get to the conversation, right?
Tourism is very, very important, and it's true that I'm sure our paths have crossed in the past, as you say. So wherever you come in Limpopo, you'll always find us.
Mm.
So tourism is one of the dominant sectors of Limpopo economy.
Mm.
And I think that you have highlighted some of the national parks we have. We said Kruger. We've got another one called Marakele and Mapugubwe.
Yeah,
Those are the tourism makers. That's why Limpopo is in the top three in terms of domestic and foreign arrivals in terms of tourism.
And even foreign arrivals. So you are attracting the international tourist, and I've seen you've actually got a tourism route that specifically takes tourists to a part of the world. When I was there, I was amazed at how many international tourists actually are in Limpopo, because you think, you know, these tourists land up in Cape Town or land up in KZN a little bit, and a lot of them land up here in Gauteng. No, but Limpopo province either has or is doing something to attract that international tourist, or it's been doing it for a while already. And I'm not only talking about the Kruger National Park and your other two parks. I'm just talking about general tourism in your part of the world. Is it something that you've recently been able to do, or is it something that's always been happening around foreign tourists?
Well, the foreign tourists have always been coming, but I think that we have upped our game in terms of marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Because the larger...
Not only marketing, you've also upped your game in accommodation and making sure that accommodation is a key part to how that international tourist stays in your province, because they want to also know that whilst they come, they can stay. And I see a lot of hotels and other guest houses and other accommodation. That's also a big improvement.
Yeah. No. When I was referring to marketing, I'm saying that in terms of showcasing what we have in terms of the resources for tourism to the international and local market. And it's correct that the beneficiaries of this is the homestays, in the villages, in the peri-urban centers, is the gaming, is the bedding, is the golfing, is the family tourism. So it's a whole lot of activities which Limpopo is endowed with, and I think we are indeed benefiting out of all the interventions that have been made by both the government and the private sector.
Mm. Are you actively trying to take advantage of that particular space? Are you actively trying to engage, tourists from around the country as well? Tourists like myself who, when I get to a weekend, I'm like, you know what, let me head off to Limpopo. And I do that. Is there an active engagement also to want to attract the South African, who lives, in Gauteng, the South African who lives in Mpumalanga, the South African who lives even in the Eastern Cape, Limpopo has something that it can showcase and has something of interest that, even a local South African would want to just take a break and head off to Limpopo?
Yes, indeed. We are actively trying to make South Africans and internationals to be aware that Limpopo has the endowment around tourism, and we use various platforms. Yeah, social media, but we also have an agency that is responsible for destination marketing, which is the agency of Limpopo Provincial Government, Limpopo Tourism Agency.
Mm.
So that is just the government effort, but there is a lot of private sector initiatives that are showcased in various media platforms so that people can be able to see and understand what is there in Limpopo. But we also... In the process of bidding for a lot of international events. Last week we hosted Miss Heritage Global, where 35 beauty queens came to Limpopo for that event, and I think that it was flighted all around the world, and in a way it really showcased what Limpopo has to offer, because it really showcased the areas in which these queens were traveling, and many of these are tourism attraction areas. So there is a lot of events, including the golf tournament, the Sunshine Tour that takes place in the Waterberg, among others. So I do know that actively, as a province in partnership with the private sector, we do a whole lot in order to showcase what we have here in Limpopo in terms of the flora and fauna and activities around families and individuals.
Sure. Your parks, they were a big attraction. There's the Kruger Park. What are the other two others? The Marakene Park and Mapengupe, right?
Marakele as well as Mapuguge.
Absolutely.
In the north. Yeah, but also the government, the provincial government also has at least 48 parks that are under our administration.
Say that again, Matozi.
We also have provincial government-owned parks. around 48 of them.
Wow.
Yes, in all the districts in Limpopo. And furthermore, we also have a lot of private game reserves. So in totality, I think we are a mecca in terms of parks and game.
Mm.
And we host the Big Five. We've got a lot of species in terms of birds, in terms of plants. So there are a lot to see in Limpopo. That's why people do not get tired of coming back and again in terms of what we are offering.
Mm. We couldn't miss last week's Mrs. Global Heritage, which of course you hosted, but so many other issues around that. I particularly looked at that and I thought, yes, look at Limpopo. They're going for the cream of the cream. They're going for what looks nice, what's beautiful and out there. But it works. It works for the province, right? Because it's something that was different, and it was something that attracted attention.
Indeed, and we are going to host it for almost 3 years. So this year was the first year.
Yeah.
We're going to host it again at the Galari Waterfront in Nandoni Dam in the Bembe District for another 2 years. So indeed, we are going to make it out so that we can really showcase what Limpopo has to offer indeed.
No, Basil, I see Basil already is waiting there. Let me take, while I'm still on the issue of tourism, because I also do want to get to the other aspect of the conversation, the fact that you are having this conference on mining, energy and industrialization. So let's just bring Basil into the conversation. Basil in Boksburg, hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, Basil, man. How are you?
I'm great, man.
Great.
Limpopo is my home province.
Oh, brilliant.
Mm. But before I get there, I love the previous conversation that you had with Shezi. I think it's beautiful. It's one of those things that I was willing to even call my nephew to listen so that they can understand different careers. And I hope you can make that a permanent thing, look at different careers and stuff like that, the challenges which are there and all those kind of... Because you had a human factor on it. I really love that.
And you know what, Basil? I mean, it was something that I didn't plan, but as soon as I knew that I was talking about NSFAS and I came to the newsroom and I started telling the newsroom I'm going to be talking about NSFAS, and then I did my quick survey and I was like, wow, 3 of the 4 people in here are NSFAS beholders, and I just thought let's bring the conversation to air.
I loved it. The fact that he talked about his parents, the support that he had from his family and so forth. But nonetheless, Denzel, I think one thing that I'll want to challenge my leader, because that's my focus, like I already said.
Mm.
One of the things that they need to improve on is the state of the road.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, I'm from Malamlele. The road from Giani to Malamlele, it's horrible.
Mm.
That road is totally horrible.
Mm.
So how do you... Because we know that economic... You cannot divorce economic movements from the state of the road. Secondly, and lastly, it is the issue of Limpopo in terms of logistics.
Mm.
I think my province is missing a great opportunity, and it's where the big employment can come from.
Mm.
We are in the gateway or to the rest of Africa.
Mm.
And we can create the biggest warehouses where we supply the rest of Africa. Because you see a lot of trucks coming to stock in Gauteng, driving back and stuff like that.
Mm.
But if we were to make a big one-stop shop in Limpopo, where people come and collect there to the rest of, to Congo, to Zimbabwe, to wherever. Mm. I mean, we next to Zimbabwe, we next
Absolutely.
To Africa, Mozambique, so forth and so on. I think that's where my province is missing. I hope that it's something that they can do quickly to create greater job opportunities for the younger ones.
Basil, thanks for the call. And Basil is in Boksburg. Matodzi, well, let's bring Basil into that conversation. Accessibility is key, there's an important engagement happening at the moment here in Gauteng, also in Boksburg, where Basil lives, and it's about local government and municipalities, and it's about action towards an ideal municipality. And some of those municipalities are responsible for a lot of things that Basil is talking about, roads and other kind of services as well. I must tell you that Basil does have a point there, in essence, about the state of accessibility, the states of roads, and that impacts, because, you know, it brings access, but it also needs to bring access of a particular nature, and that nature is that we drive vehicles, and people are put off by that in a general sense when he says, for example, he quotes a particular road up there and he says, it's bad, really, really bad. What are you doing around accessibility, making these things accessible, so you've got the tourists coming, you've got the accommodation, you've got the hotels, you've got the parks, but you know, there's something sometimes we overlook in this particular country, specifically in the municipalities and in the provinces. It's this issue of roads.
Yeah, indeed, I cannot be able to argue against Basil when he says that the road, the particular road that it's referring to, is bad. Mm-hmm. We have got a backlog of road in terms of new roads as well as maintenance. But if you were to travel the length and the breadth of Limpopo, you'll see that there's a lot of construction of roads as well as maintenance. I think that it's just an issue of resources. And therefore, I want to believe indeed that even that road in from Malamulele to Gian will at some stage be attended to, because it's an important road that connects communities. So this road, the way they define is that you got roads that are built and maintained by the provincial government, mostly your R roads. There is also the roads that are done and built and maintained by the municipalities, which you call the district roads. And then you have got the national roads. So a combination of resources that are drawn from the three spheres of government is certainly helping to clear the backlog. But I know that indeed it's taking long. But the provincial government has got a record in terms of all the roads that need their maintenance. And this is one of those roads. And I think that he has also mentioned a very, very important point around leveraging on our status as a gateway to Africa.
Absolutely.
It is true that Limpopo borders Zimbabwe, Mozambique, and Botswana. So the N1 road, it is a very important road in terms of the freight and logistics in the SADC community. Mm. And therefore, we know for sure that because we are part of the SADC free trade area, we have got a duty-free access to almost 350 and a million people in terms of the market in the SADC area. I think you will be happy to know that we are taking advantage of this positioning. And as a result, we are planning a special economic zone in Musina and Makado, which is called Musina-Makado Special Economic Zone. And one of the businesses that are there is an issue around the freight and the logistics. And when we combine our effort with the national government, we are going to ensure that there will be a one-stop shop that will make sure that we fast-track the clearance of trucks of logistics at the border and through a lot of and instruments such as special lane and others. But certainly, the warehousing is also an important element so that we can be able to create even the economies in the study community, where we can be able to pull the logistics and the freight and the goods from various parts of South Africa, and they can be ferried from Musina area to other parts of the continent. Mm. And I think that it is something that we are leveraging on. And I think that in 5 years' time, that plan will become a reality.
Sure. Well, Matodzi, we are talking about Limpopo and we are looking at its tourism, the tourism industry. We've just touched on roads. I'm going to take a small break. And then on the other side of that, we'll have the news bulletin. But then I really also then do want to get into that issue of your conference, which is mining, energy and industrialization. And that's the conference that's happening over the dates, the 29th and the 30th. Matozi, thanks for the conversation so far. Half of it around tourism. And I do think tourism is an important aspect that you need to deal with there as a province. You're putting a lot of money into that aspect and it's working for you. But let's get to the conference that's at hand. Let's understand September 21. September 21, and we were getting out of COVID. We were getting out of, a lull. We were getting and trying to rebuild the economies again. September 21, when you had this particular conference, because I'm thinking it's a conference that happens every year. Was it a virtual conference or did you have it in person? What kind of format did it take?
It was a hybrid conference.
Yeah.
There will be the conference tomorrow and Friday.
Right.
We have got we have delegates attending, both physically as well as virtually through various networks.
All right.
Microsoft team, yeah.
Okay. So you're engaging both sides. That's what technology does these days. You can accommodate anybody, as and when and where they are. Day one, you've got 2 days. Let's look at day one. And I think on day one, you're looking specifically at mining and energy investment. Day two, you're looking at renewable alternative energy. And I do want to, have that conversation as well. Let's talk about day one, mining, energy and energy investment. And there's various things that one can actually raise there. Let's talk firstly to the issue of illegal mining in your province. Is that an issue that you are dealing with and dealing with quite decisively in your province?
Indeed, illegal mining is a challenge in this country. Wherever you got mines, you always have people trying to do these activities. And this the strategy of dealing with illegal mining is at a national level, with the provinces supporting. I do say this because we have got a multidisciplinary team that include law enforcement agencies that deal with this in a holistic way, so that there is arrest and prosecution and confiscation of materials from those who do these activities. So indeed, those are serious operations that are reported from time to time, but they are led by the national effort.
Are you winning?
We are winning in a way, but the fact of the matter is that people continue to go back to these activities.
Absolutely, so, and I was talking about in Joburg, it's the same thing. You try to solve it, you try to deal with it, and then a month later, it's back to where it was almost.
Indeed. Well, there will be people who. Who want to do some small-scale mining and artisanal mining, who perhaps because they don't have a knowledge on how to do it, might be attracted to these activities. So in a way, as much as you are punishing those who are doing illegal mining, you also look at the opportunities to make sure that the public become aware that the government has got all the policy tools and measures to ensure that the communities are able to participate and in mining in their communities, and they are then equipped obviously with skills and so forth so that they can be able to conduct and participate in the value chain around mining with bigger companies. But there are those who by nature they just want to do illegal mining to loot and commit the criminal activities, and those ones is those that even when they are arrested they continue to go back and do this kind of activities. And some of these, they manifest into criminal gangs that do violence to the communities around them and against each other. So that's why it's important that even the multidisciplinary task team must have the law enforcement agencies so that we root our country, our province of this challenge.
I'm going to stop the conversation a little bit because we've got a voice note and I want to play it because it's relevant to the conversation. I don't want to play it after the conversation. So let's hear what one of the callers said in relation to the conversation we're having at the moment around Limpopo.
Evening. Oncoming on the roads in Limpopo, the implants mine in Mokopane, the stretch of road for 20 kilometers from the town that is going to the mines, it's the most dangerous ever, full of heavy trucks, narrow road, no space to drive, and it's passing through the most congested place called Mokopane, and it's not safe to drive in there. The mine should take responsibility and build the railroads to the mine so that the staff can be away from the big the roads that carry a large crowd of people. Thank you, Carlo.
Matozi, you know, it's an issue of roads, it's an issue of safety, and I do want to take the conversation because Limpopo is a mining area. All your big companies, Anglo, Exxaro, Glencoe, you know, they're there. And you've got all the stakeholders, you know, over the next 2 days. And it's a wealth of resources, you know, that you're going to have in a conversation over the next 2 days. But you've got, like I said, Anglo, Exxaro, Glencoe and the likes in your particular province. You've got the fact that you are a mining area. Limpopo is a mining province. And you listen to Carl over there. And he talks about issues that, you know, in one instance, you need the mines, you need the mines, you need that kind of revenue, you need them to be operating. At the moment, we know the difference between what's happened between the rail and road transport, and that's an old conversation, and, you know, we can have that. But he raises an issue also that talks to, you know, community safety, community issues that they are, you know, experiencing on a day-to-day basis. How does one deal with that kind of mix? On the one hand, you need them. On the one hand, it's, you know, like it's absolutely, you know, essential that those operations happen. On the other hand, you have a Carl who then phones in and says, yeah, can't we, I know we need them, but can't we do something about them, please, you know?
Yeah. No, it is true that many of our roads were built before the mining activities started in various areas.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, those roads were not geared into large traffic volumes, including trucks.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, with the emergence of mining activity, and therefore the roads become congested and become damaged.
Mm-hmm.
The government does its bit to try and repair this road in terms of its plans.
Mm.
But I think that what he's saying is that there is a need for mining companies to be able to fund some of this infrastructure, be it maintenance, upgrading, and the development of new infrastructure. I think we have got a model that is working in Limpopo. I'll give you a typical example.
Mm.
In an area in the East Sekhukhune district, mining companies have come together using funding from social labor plan and otherwise, to fund the steel bridge in Steelport. And we are talking about mining companies like Glencoe, Exxaro, Anglo, and others.
Mm.
And we do believe that the pooling of resources from various mining companies can be able to help us in terms of increasing the scale, whether we are building infrastructure, we are rehabilitating it, or otherwise. And I think that it is the model that we are going to use going forward.
Mm.
The government has got a government mining task team where all the mining companies are participating, where we talk about development. And they know the infrastructure needs of government, and then they take from that list as they start funding this. So indeed, there is a challenge, and then we are trying to find innovative solutions around addressing such infrastructure gaps.
Mm. You know what? It's mining and energy investment, and one then needs to bring Eskom into this particular space as well, because mines need energy, and they will use up huge amounts of energy as well in your particular province. The whole aspect of Eskom and where it's going and before I even get into the renewable space, because you've got to begin to think about that as a province as well. The scenario with Eskom, and this is not even an issue around, because it's going to impact tourism as well at some point, and it does impact tourism, you know, when the lights go on and off and people can't do, you know, one, two or the other. The issue with Eskom has to also be something that, you know, as a provincial government, you also look at and you also begin to say, how do we begin to minimize, as a province, our dependency on what's going on at Eskom? Have you had any of those kind of engagements?
Indeed. We are continuously engaging investors so that we can be able to find an alternative energy to our industrialization needs. Mm-hmm. And I will be able to give you a typical example that we have got an existing solar farm in the Capricorn district. And then there are a lot of efforts by private sector companies in collaboration with municipalities and the provincial government to build some of these energy sources. In terms of our plan for special economic zone, in Mosina Makado, for example, we are going to build another solar farm that will produce in excess of 1,000 megawatt. And then in the Sikukuni area with the Fitakumutuba, the SEZ, we are going to build the battery storage as well as the hydrogen sources of energy. Mm-hmm. So the energy mix is very, very important. But I think we are quite happy that the policy environment at a national level, it does allow the intervention by provincial governments, by municipal governments, private sector, as well as the partnership thereof to create new energy sources so that we can reduce dependency on Eskom. But the base load Eskom is still important, but it's just that we must make sure that we must produce new energy sources that will go on and off the grid.
Mm. How do you balance calls concern? You know, there's a community concern. How do you balance calls concern, understanding that Limpopo is a mining province as well? How do you begin to balance calls concerns on the one hand and understanding how mines operate and what they need and the fact that you need them as well and that they are a, you know, a revenue booster for national and, of course, on the province? It's essential. But how do you balance, you know, without influencing the other in a negative way, you know, so that Carl doesn't feel that the mining industry dominates his particular world in such a way that he begins to have a negative outlook? How do you balance all of that?
You mean in terms of development of mine?
In terms of just development within communities and having conversations with communities and making sure that communities, you know, in as much as they understand and see the mines, but they can also go about their own development. They can also go about their own kind of economies, which is sometimes separate to mining economies.
Yeah. No, it is very, very important that when a particular investor identify the potential of mining of various minerals or any minerals, there is a process which they undertake, part of which is that they must be able to engage the DMRE at a provincial and national level so that they can get the exploration license. So these licenses that they get up until they get into mining, it has got certain conditionalities. For example, you are not able to mine in a wetlands, in wet areas, where we have got water resources and you interfere with it. You are not able to mine next to heritage resources and otherwise. So therefore, that balance is part of the licensing condition. But what is very, very important is that there is a dialogue and engagement that is sought and required. Firstly, as you do the project preparation and development. For example, if you want to do the surface infrastructure for mining, if you want to do, obviously, firstly, the environmental impact assessment, the community has got to be involved. And it is only upon that consideration that the communities agree to without objection, that indeed the Department of Mineral and Energy will then issue the mining license. But at the same time, it is important to note that mining companies do have set aside funds called the social labor plan, wherein they set aside resources for community development. And I think that the typical example that I gave around the steel bridge in Steelport, the mining companies are now coming together and saying that in order to massify and upscale many of these projects that are done through social labor plans, it is better that they combine resources and pool resources so that they can be able to build large infrastructure and the needs of the communities. But indeed, we cannot be able to say that where there are resources and endowments in terms of mining materials, then we stop it on the basis that it's clashing with development. So what is required is a balanced development where the communities can give a nod, they can benefit in terms of employment, in terms of skills transfer, as well as partly owning the mines themselves.
Yes. Matozi, let me go to Ronnie in Atteridgeville. Ronnie, you've been listening to the conversation. You've got a question?
How are you, my brother?
I'm good, Ronnie. How are you, man?
I'm surviving.
Sharp.
Yes, I forgot.
Matozi, yeah?
Yes, Barmini.
Do you know Ronnie?
Oh, what are you?
Hey.
Yeah, Zino, you're in the Unatayezo.
Hey.
Yeah, I said, and you can follow for our ideologies here. Go Jimbra, asking that.
Hey.
All right. Denzel, look in the Matozi.
Yes, you left me. You know what you did there, Ronnie? You know, I was like, okay, you know, I can understand Xhosa, I can get the Zulu, but ish, you know, I'm out of this conversation. And I was like, Ronnie's going to have to come back to me, you know, so that I can get this conversation in a way. Ronnie? Let me bring Ronnie back into the conversation. Yeah. Ronnie?
Oh, Denzel, sorry about it, man.
No. I was enjoying the conversation, Ronnie, that you were having with Matozi there. I was just saying, you know, in as much as the two of you were having a lovely conversation, I was sitting here going, I don't know what Ronnie is saying.
Oh, I'm sorry. And how is that, Denzel? How is that from a Zulu man? I'm Zulu, and I was speaking to Matozi. In
you see, Ronnie, that's the beauty of our country, man.
Yes, I want to celebrate Africa.
Absolutely,
I speak many languages.
It's heritage, Swahili. My man. It's absolute heritage.
I speak Swahili. I speak Shona. I speak all the languages of African. Right?
So, sorry, Matozi, I have to ask Ronnie a question. Ronnie, how did you get to having understanding and also a capability of all the languages? Is it just by bumping into people all over the place or how specifically?
Denzel, let me lie.
Yeah.
I think it is a gift from God and then.
Yeah.
I think so. Because I've been exposed in my life. I'm 55 years old.
Yeah.
And my thing, throughout my life, I've been exposed to many tribes.
Uh-huh.
And then I used to work for PDAF, Bufals, you know.
Uh-huh.
It exposes you to many, many places. Mm-hmm. You know?
And that would have exposed you to different people with different languages.
Yes, and at some stage, I was a soldier.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, sure. That's how I got it. So I took advantage of...
Ronnie, what's your question to Matozi, or what do you have to say?
Well, Matozi, by understanding, Matozi is now selling Limpopo in terms of tourism.
Yeah. And mining and energy and all the others.
Yeah. It's like you are marketing Limpopo.
Yeah, true story too. I hope he's taking advantage of the platform as well, while we're having the conversation with him. Yes.
Okay, no problem.
Sure.
Okay, fine. Coming to tourism, mm-hmm. I wanted to find out in question. Now there used to be a tourism board.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the tourism board itself is an SOE.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And now I have got a problem. I want my brother. Yeah? Mm. I want my brother to understand that if you don't give leverage to the mandate of SOEs, in as far as, for example, tourism, then there's a disjuncture in what the government is intended. The intention is being noble as such.
The intention noble, but there's a disjuncture.
Sure. If that mandate is not carried out, then there is a disjuncture.
Sure, I got you.
Yes, yeah. So, you see? And I mean that the brother is so eloquent.
Mm.
Yeah? But then, mustn't take it with a pinch of salt, because I'm saying to you, right now, there is a problem. You look at Limpopo. Yeah? If you market tourism, also, have a look at the issue of high unemployment.
Sure. Ronnie, I have to leave it there, Ronnie, because I have to go back to Matozi. Matozi, you know what? I think Ronnie's point also is a question of how the people of Limpopo benefit from tourism, in a broad stroke. And then, you know, towards the end, you would have grasp the other kind of issues that he's also bringing to the fore. But his issue in the main also, from my understanding, also is how people, ordinary people, would gain from this, you know, from the aspect of tourism. He's bringing the issue of tourism back into the conversation.
Thank you very much, Denzel. I heard Ronnie very well, but I was impressed, actually, of the fact that he's able to converse in various languages.
Yeah, no, me too. You know, he left me totally out of the conversation. I was like, oh, man.
I too can be able to converse in at least 8 South African languages. So that's the beauty. It's so easy to move around when you know the languages.
You know, I feel defeated.
Yeah.
I feel defeated.
The good thing
what you and Ronnie have just done to me is defeat me, bro.
you know, Ronnie initially asked whether the tourism board is still there. I say in confirmation that the Limpopo Tourism Agency, it is still there.
Yeah.
It is an agency of the provincial government of Limpopo under the Department of Economic Development, Environment and Tourism, the department which I lead.
Yeah.
It has got the responsibility around destination marketing, meaning that marketing the province as a tourist destination or mecca of choice to local and foreign tourists. So if you want to use associations, you might be able to say that it's doing a very good work. I'll give you a typical example that Limpopo is in the top 3 in terms of a destination of choice to local travelers as well as foreign travelers. So it then means that the work that they are doing together with the work that is done even by the private sector to showcase Limpopo is really benefiting. Obviously, when these tourists come to Limpopo, we do benefit because of the revenue that is generated out of that. And certainly, we have got a lot of communities, be in the city, in the farms, peri-urban center, and villages, who own tourism products. And they also benefit because tourists always choose a variety of weather, depending on whether they want to see heritage, they want to see village life, they want to see flora and fauna. So the work of the agency, including the department in terms of product development, it really certainly helps in terms of ensuring that we have got a good standard in terms of tourism product, and they are also accessible in terms of destination marketing through the platforms that are created by Limpopo Tourism Agency.
Sure. And then I want to talk to you now about the conference in itself. 209 billion rand of pledges in the September 2021 conference. Those are pledges, right? Pledges of 209 billion rand in pledges. Did you see any of the money? Was the money actually, you know, concretized? How pledges are something else, but you know, people must eventually, you know, come to the party and bring the money to the table. Let's start there. Did you see that kind of benefit from the last kind investment conference?
Yeah, it is true that we were able to get the pledges of 208 billion in our inaugural investment conference last year, 2021. Mm-hmm. The larger proportion was for mining, 93 billion was for the mining sector. Mm-hmm. There was a sizable number of, in terms of, followed by the energy, and then other sectors such as agriculture, agro-processing, tourism, manufacturing, and otherwise. We have got a tracker where we look at how these pledges are being realized and implemented.
Sure.
And to date, after a year, 50 billion, which is 23% of the total 208 that was pledged, has already been spent in Limpopo.
Has already been spent.
It has already been spent.
That's not a bad number coming. You know, the pledges were high, 208 billion rand, and from that, you know, you've got a realization of 50 billion rand already spent. That's not too bad.
And it was what was expected, because many of these pledges are multi-year pledges.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Therefore, you'll have year one where you are doing planning, and then construction comes in the later year.
Sure. And obviously, you're looking at new commitments for this particular year. How do you work this process? Do you still engage the old commitments and the pledges of the previous year, running side by side then with the kind of new commitments? Because you're going to get new commitments, and again, people are going to come about and say, you know what, I pledged this and I want to do this. So how do you separate the two conferences from you know, keep them in their separate lanes? Because obviously, you know, those would have been business opportunities that would have arisen from 2021. You would have new business opportunities that arise from 2022. How are you going to separate those tracks? You said you've got a tracker. How are you going to separate those tracks so that, you know, pledges made in 2022 don't fall into, you know, your category of 2021, and your 2021 pledges don't overspill into your 2022?
There is a categorization. So if company A pledged in 2021, say 20 billion, and then in this year and next year, it wants to pledge 10 billion, we will say that that is an expansion of the original, but also calculated in terms of the new ones. And the new ones will be calculated totally different from that. So that we can be able to see that there are existing investments, there are expansions, as well as the new pledges that must be implemented going forward. So it's a lot of work. It's not you must engage each and every of these investors so that you can be able to go and do the monitoring to be able to be sure that indeed it is being implemented as they are saying. So there is a need to engage these investors who have pledged last year, and then go around to be able to crowd in the new investors. So this work will take us to the length and the breadth of this country, so that as we are scouting for investors, So it is not an easy job. It's a lot of work, but in the end, it pays. As you can see, that's counting big numbers.
Mm. Does it help that a lot of your departments get clean audits?
Well, clean audit, it is a yardstick of...
because people want to invest. Because people want to invest in places that are, you know, secure also, and you know, they need to see some form of financial responsibility too.
Yeah, the provincial government has got a clean audit strategy where they want all the departments in Limpopo, all the 10 of them, the 11th one being the legislature, to get this clean audit outcome. Of course. And it all depends on where you were, and you will see that in most cases there will be a lot of improvement. If a department, in for example, in the current financial year, gets a qualified clean audit, the goal is to go to unqualified and then to clean. And I think that when you got clean, then you ensure that you fully implement the clean audit strategy so that you can be able to sustain that. That goes for the department, sectoral department in Limpopo, as well as our SOE or our agencies. So it is something that we preach here to provincial government, and I think that by deed it shows. And I think that investors, when they see the efficient management of government and the public purse, they do realize that it is important, and then they do take us seriously in terms of our engagement and commitment.
Matozi, I need to let you go. Also, I've just kept you, you know, for a long, long time. But I need to ask you, you know, at least two questions. How are you attracting skills? Because, you know, you are located, you know, on the top end of the country. Some would say, you know what, you're out there and Gauteng is down here and the economy is working down there. So it's a little harder maybe for you, you know, to get your economies going up there, but there is mining and agriculture is also massive in that particular province. What are you doing to attract skills? Because you've got to attract, you know, skills into the province that suggest, you know, that people want to come in and work in Limpopo.
Yeah. Our aim is to build a nature demand driven skills in various guises or various categories of our industrialization.
Mm-hmm.
Limpopo province has got a good skill base. I think some of our expatriates are everywhere in the country. Of
absolutely,
South Africa.
You export. You, I must say, you know, you like China. You know, you export people. A lot of people, if you bump into them here in Gauteng, will tell you that they're from Limpopo. You know that
we export skilled people.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But I wanted to say that...
that's the difference. I like that, Matozi.
We do have a lot of skills training institutions.
Yeah.
From TVET, and we have got five TVET, which is one per district, and they do the vocational and artisan development skills. Mm. And then we do have universities that concentrate on the academia and technology program. We have got University of Venda, we have got University of Limpopo, China University of Technology has got a campus here. And then where we have got, and we also have our own training centers under our SOE, which is the Limpopo Economic Development Agency, the training centers that really, really assist in terms of the latter end of the phases of artisanal training. So I think what is important is that although we are a province, we don't have borders with other provinces. And therefore, where we can leverage on some aspects of infrastructure and training, whether in Gauteng or everywhere else, we do form this partnership so that our people are fully trained and they are geared towards this industrialization path that we are seeking here in Limpopo. So indeed, I think that some of our more qualified people who are our ambassadors everywhere,
and you've got a lot of those. You've really, really got a lot of those. I must tell you that.
We also have a homecoming revolution to say that we are also industrialized as Limpopo. Please come back home so that you can be next to your home.
Absolutely. My last question to you, Broer. Building the Provincial Academic Hospital. Where are you?
We are in the planning phase of
is it I mean it's you know, it's something that was mooted it's something that, you know, was suggested, because obviously you also don't want people, for whatever reasons, you know, to be, you know, exported for the wrong reasons. You know, if I need medical, you know, requirements in my own province, I need to be able to be taken care of there. You don't need to, you know, be then in the position because you are exporting people because they need to go and get health services in other areas. So, you know, an academic hospital, a provincial one is key, you know, to also maintaining some form of service in that particular province. Now, I know it's been mooted. I know that, you know, there's been suggestions and talk about it. And I just wanted an update on that. Where are you, more or less?
Yeah. No, it has gone beyond a suggestion. Mm-hmm. It is an approved plan by the provincial cabinet, and therefore it is being implemented by the Department of Health. And I think it also involves the Department of Health nationally. Mm-hmm. And it is a project, obviously, that resources will be put aside and it will be realized. I can't give you time frames at the moment, mm-hmm. but I think that at some stage you will reconcile and be able to tell you the real progress on the ground. But it is under preparation and development as we speak.
Matozi Ratumbu, HOD for Economic Development, Environment and Tourism in Limpopo. Thank you so much, Brur. And I'm looking forward to visiting that particular province again and pretty soon.
You are very much welcome. Please come and enjoy what Limpopo has to offer. And thank you very much, Denzel, for having me.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.